Preface to the Second German Edition. That there should have been a demand for a second edition of this book, a book which cannot be described as easy to read, before the completion of its first decade, is not to be explained by the interest of the professional circles to which I was addressing myself. My psychiatric colleagues have not, apparently, attempted to look beyond the astonishment which may at first have been aroused by my novel conception of the dream. And the professional philosophers, who are anyhow accustomed to disposing of the dream in a few sentences, mostly the same, as a supplement to the states of consciousness, have evidently failed to realize that precisely in this connection it was possible to make all manner of deductions, such as must lead to a fundamental modification of our psychological doctrines. The attitude of the scientific reviewers was such to lead me to expect that the fate of the book would be to fall into oblivion. And the little flock of faithful adherents who follow my lead in the therapeutic application of psychoanalysis and interpretation of dreams by my method could not have exhausted the first edition of this book. I feel, therefore, that my thanks are due to the wider circle of cultured and inquiring readers whose sympathy has induced me, after the lapse of 9 years, once more to take up this difficult work, which has so many fundamental bearings. I am glad to be able to say that I found little in the book that called for alteration. Here and there I have interpolated fresh material, or have added opinions based on more extensive experience, or I have sought to elaborate individual points. But the essential passages treating of dreams and their interpretation, and the psychological doctrines to be deduced therefrom, have been left unaltered. Subjectively, at all events, they have stood the test of time. Those who are acquainted with my other writings, on the etiology and mechanism of the psychoneuroses, will know that I never offer unfinished work as finished, and that I have always endeavored to revise my conclusions in accordance with my maturing opinions. But as regards the subject of the dream life, I am able to stand by my original text. In my many years' work upon the problems of the neuroses, I have often hesitated, and I have often gone astray. And then it was always the interpretation of dreams that restored my self-confidence. My many scientific opponents are actuated by a wise instinct when they decline to follow me into the region of onirology. Even the material of this book, even my own dreams, defaced by time or superseded, by means of which I have demonstrated the rules of dream interpretation, revealed, when I came to revise these pages, a continuity that resisted revision. For me, of course, this book has an additional subjective significance, which I did not understand until after its completion. It reveals itself to me as a piece of my self-analysis, as my reaction to the death of my father, that is, to the most important event, the most poignant loss in a man's life. Once I had realized this, I felt that I could not obliterate the traces of this influence. But to my readers, the material from which they learn to evaluate and interpret dreams will be a matter of indifference. Where an inevitable comment could not be fitted into the old context, I have indicated by square brackets that it does not occur in the first edition. Berchtesgaden, 1908. Introductory Note, First Edition. In this volume, I have attempted to expound the methods and results of dream interpretation, and in so doing, I do not think I have overstepped the boundary of neuropathological science. For the dream proves on psychological investigation to be the first of a series of abnormal psychic formations, a series whose succeeding members, the hysterical phobias, the obsessions, the delusions, must, for practical reasons, claim the attention of the physician. The dream, as we shall see, has no title to such practical importance. But for that very reason, its theoretical value as a typical formation is all the greater. And the physician who cannot explain the origin of dream images will strive in vain to understand the phobias and the obsessive and delusional ideas, or to influence them by therapeutic methods. But the very context to which our subject owes its importance must be held responsible for the deficiencies of the following chapters. The abundant lacunae in this exposition represent so many points of contact at which the problem of dream formation is linked up with the more comprehensive problems of psychopathology, problems which cannot be treated in these